This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 30th of May, 2023. We're back in business here after the long weekend here in Europe, although we did put in a deep dive podcast on investing in commodities, whether it's futures or equities. So tune into that podcast from yesterday. It's pretty evergreen, so you can always bookmark it for later consumption. So the big market event here, which is not seeing a huge reaction, but I think it's a very important step because it's been bottling up things for a while, and that is the debt ceiling deal in principle agreed between House Speaker McCarthy and the White House. Not having a huge impact in terms of the forward outlook. I think it's a net-net, it's a bit tight on the fiscal side, and that's not a good thing for the economy or necessarily for the U.S. dollar. But if we look at what it could mean for markets, of course, it's all about the Treasury having to rebuild its account with the Fed and a big new net issuance of some half a trillion dollars over the coming months. And so far the market doesn't seem bothered, although we've got lots of warnings out there, among others from us. The only effects we're seeing in the market is a little bit of risk on, perhaps to avoid the whole default scenario. We have this very inverted yield curve again with the front end still very high, December priced at 5% now, the December Fed meeting that is. And further out the curve, though, U.S. Treasury yields actually came under a bit of pressure as bonds are bid up, I suppose, on increased comfort perhaps with owning longer-term debt. I don't know. The dollar is stronger, but not alarmingly so. So, what's your take, Peter, here? And we had a very, to add on, we had a Friday session. We were talking last week. We're really concerned about the vibe and the big technical rejection of that rally. That tried to extend above 4,200, but couldn't. And then suddenly we got a snapback rally. Does it feel to you like this was AI? Maybe just to some degree, it was such a big rally on Friday.
That was a combination of it, but I think it was also the indications that we were getting closer to some kind of a U.S. debt deal. But then, as you said, John, I mean, and we talked about that the other day. If fine, we get a debt deal, but what is the impact on the fiscal impulse and thereby also economic growth, which is slowing down in the U.S. right now? So I think it's too early to make a lot of firm conclusions here. What I've done on slide two is I'm zooming out a little bit, and because I think Friday's session was a little bit weird, despite that the rally above the 4,200. But if we zoom out and look at the 1 week performance, you actually see a very long tail of the equity market that is rather weak. And then you have that semiconductor, cybersecurity, and mega caps that have all been fueled by the talk about AI. I mean, unless you have been living under a rock and not been on social media, I mean, the internet is just going gangbusters on this whole AI. I mean, there's a lot of obviously real reporting on interesting things that AI is doing right now and what it most likely will be doing just around the corner. But then there's also this, it's just so clear that everyone is taking advantage of this and then using it to pump and dump a lot of different things that have nothing really to do with AI. And just, it's getting too much. As we talked about in our equity note, there is really a bubble-like feeling to it. So, but right now it's still red hot, and let's see how long this rally in AI-related stocks can carry. On slide three, I've put in the earnings estimates for the S&P 500 and the stock 600. And as you can see here, the rally is just a rally, if you will, but the upward revisions to earnings releases or earnings estimates over the next year continue to be lifted here. Also for the US, so if you combine that with the VIX that closed at 17.5-ish on Friday, just very little worries in the market, especially in the equity market, over this debt ceiling and also the near-term future on the economy. And I don't know how you square it, John, with what we are observing in the wider market, the equity market, the bond market, but also across the different dollar pairs. But I don't know whether you see it as a disconnect. I just find it quite interesting that the equity market is just so relaxed as it is right now.
Yeah, well, it feels like those earnings estimates and the labor market is still tight. It feels like the economy is still humming along, but there seem to be some forward concerns, and you see that in the yield curve. And a data point we're going to get today is quite interesting as well. So I've put up on slide four This is something I think I've shown before. It's plotting the U.S. 2-10 yield curve, so the slope of that yield curve. It's in blue versus the black, which is the consumer confidence. This is the Conference Board survey. Expectations less the present situation. So expectations being the leading factor. And you can see that those two data series quite closely correlate and make sense. You know, as your expectations darken, eventually the present situation starts to catch up and you head into a recession. And then once things are bad, the expectations pick up in relative terms. And to my mind, or not to my mind, but the evidence suggests that the yield curve slightly leads this type of expectations spread here. And neither one has really turned around. We did see a reasonable little turnaround there if you zoom in on the 2-10 yield slope. But now we have that coming back in, inverting more aggressively again. And the present situation, if you look over on the right, yes, expectations are poor, and they're actually nearing the cycle lows pretty remarkably if you think about where we were last year in the summer when we hit these lows in terms of consumer confidence and the expectations component of that. It was in the context of these galloping inflation rises, and especially the one that really impacts the U.S. consumer, those gasoline prices hitting record levels. This is not an issue at all right now, and yet the expectations component continues to wear off while the present situation holds up so well. And that present situation is very related to the jobs market, so it suggests that the Fed still has its work cut out for it and is going to have to hold these rates higher. And you're really going to need, based on historic patterns, you're going to need to see the present situation coming off before we start to see recessionary risks. And that was the case if I put two lines in there, so early 2001, and late 2007, you clearly saw that the present situation was coming off and the yield curve was really aggressively moving by the time then as well, before we were, that was in the time when we were actually hitting a recession. So we're just not there yet in terms of the recession, is the long story short. Ola, you're standing by here, and I want to jump to you because commodities are certainly saying we're not terribly enthused about the medium-term outlook, and you've talked about the difficulty of juggling that with what are still the big supply constraints. And then we have this really remarkable, I mean, truly remarkable natural gas situation, which you've also been talking about here in Europe. So I'll let you just take it away and take the focus where you'd like to.
Thank you, John. Yeah, let's start off with the crude oil market. First of all, we've been grinding slowly higher now throughout the month of May. We had that warning recently from the Saudi energy minister about the short sellers should be watching out. And that's adding some support back into the market. But generally, the market is in the wait and see mode right now because we're waiting for the OPEC meeting next month. There is some disquiet, I would say, about Russia's oil production or exports, which remains quite elevated. They have not made the 500,000 barrel cut that they talked about for May, and let's see how that is being received in the at the meeting. But generally, what we're finding a market that is not as tight as it used to be, naturally enough. But just looking at the 1-year roll spread on Brent and WTI, the average of the two, it's still in the backwardation, highlighting the market is still looking for tightness here in the short term to keep the forward curve inverted as it is, and together, and part of the recent weakness in the curve is also the selling that has been hitting the market. Just put in the total speculative position. When I say total, I look both at what hedge funds are holding, but also the other section called other reportables, because that tends to be quite price sensitive as well. And if you add those two together, you can see the net long right now held across the crude oil and fuel products is at the lowest level in more than 10 years. So market has already now been selling off quite a bit in anticipation of weakness ahead. We'll see what where we land. I think the Saudi Arabia, according to latest reports, most certainly need 80 plus to balance their books. So any additional weakness could potentially be met by some additional production cuts. So that's where we are in the oil markets. And then you mentioned the gas market, John. It's just phenomenal. We are on the longest losing streak in gas since 2007 in European gas prices. We had just been grinding lower, trading in the mid-20s right now, and we are, pretty much back to fairly close to some long-term averages. And what has been raising the temperature a little bit in the market this past week is the prospect for potentially hitting negative gas prices this autumn. Obviously not on a, if you're on a 1 month contract or anything, but the day-to-day gas price could in extreme situations turn negative simply because the inventory levels are expected to be filled up by October. That's before the winter demand season really kicks in. And what happens if you're doing that? That period have days with strong wind and solar power generation. Then basically, there's not the gas is it could struggle to find a home, and that basically means that they could turn negative. So what a difference a year makes. August last year we were looking at 350 plus prices, and now we're talking about an utter collapse. And what we're finding at this time, and because consumers or private consumers, they're obviously not the player right now because we are not using our heating. We don't need the heating. So it's the industrial demand, and the industrial demand is expected to be down somewhere between 20% and 25%. There's actually some speculation that a part of that, perhaps even 5%, will never return, simply because industry has become wiser. Some have moved out of the region, economic slowdown, and so on. So it basically means that the inventory levels, gas-wise, is rising fast at this point in time, simply because the industrial demand, which is the main source of demand at this time of year, is weak, and some of that, as I mentioned, may not come back.
Yeah, and then relating that back into the FX market, so roll back to slide 5 there. So those very weak gas prices, clearly one of the big impacts for the Norwegian krona, which remains at very low levels and pushing close to euro knock of 12. Swedish krona also very weak here. And that was despite the Riksbank beginning some verbal intervention on the currency. I'm really curious. After that verbal intervention not really having any impact here, if we can get a stabilized currency without some sort of government move on the situation. We need to have this financial system bailed out in Sweden, and we need to see a larger and more liquid local government bond market. We're looking forward at the slide deck here, earnings to watch. We still have earnings season largely over with, but there are a couple of interesting names still on the docket for the rest of this week. So take us through that, Peter.
Yeah, we're tracking HP, the consumer business of the former bigger HP. They spun out the HP Enterprise, which is also reporting today. And both of those companies are reporting after the market closed. But HP, as you can see in that little insert here on the slide, they expected to be down 21% compared to a year ago. Also, a decline there in the operating income. Obviously, high inflation and consumers spending money elsewhere because of that shift in inflation is taking a toll on consumer electronics. Tomorrow, Salesforce, very big competitor to Microsoft across a lot of enterprise application software programs, part of the mega cap segment, have been coming back. A lot of expectation. We featured Salesforce in our earnings preview last week on analysis.saxo. It's a company that over the decades really grew at plus 25% consistently on the top line, never really prioritizing profitability. But last year, they were under heavy attack from various activist investors. They're really pressuring Mark Benioff, the co-founder and current CEO of the company, to really prioritize profitability now. And that seems to also be what is baked into the expectations. There's a huge jump expected for Salesforce in their operating income, almost, I think, a doubling from a year ago. They've slashed in cost cuts, laid off a lot of people, and still expected to manage to grow the top line compared to a year ago. So a lot of focus on Salesforce. CrowdStrike as well, reporting tomorrow on the cybersecurity theme. And then Broadcom on Thursday is the other big mega cap company reporting. Recently struck a deal with Apple, very crucial for Apple. They want to source more components for their global supply chain domestically, and Broadcom is part of the cornerstone of that strategy. So we'll be watching Broadcom, very important company for the overall electronics industry. And then I haven't highlighted it in blue, but we should mention Lululemon Athletica, one of those few consumer related stocks that are really doing very well on the stock price and underlying performance, taking market share from some of their competitors as the company is branching out from selling yoga pants to also now having their own shoe collection, etc. It's a super fascinating company with a very interesting customer base.
All right. And then on the macro calendar for today, as noted, the consumer confidence, and I forgot to highlight the actual data fact, the April spread there between expectations and confidence is the worst it's been in, well, let's go back to the slide there. Yeah, basically in the modern era, just except for 2001. it just reached the lowest level. So yeah, watching whether the present situation rolls over, and also if we see a worsening in the expectations as we did in the Michigan confidence survey. We also have a interesting, the Riksbank is up talking about the Swedish krona. They're up talking with in parliament before a parliamentary committee. And some home price data. It's always so old, this home price data, but that's for March. A couple other bits and pieces. Australian CPI up overnight, and the Chinese official manufacturing and non-manufacturing PMIs. But I think the focus this week will be on the two inflation data points, or the inflation data point, sorry, on Thursday from the Eurozone. And we get some of the other countries across the Eurozone reporting today. Also the Spanish CPI today, French tomorrow. And then on Friday, it's the big U.S. jobs report. Again, still been seeing very strong data. And then we had a lot of confusion around the weekly jobless claims because of this a big revision lower because some fraud was discovered in Massachusetts. So we're still a little bit waiting for that shoe to drop as well. For now, that's a wrap. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.